winking at me. It's stopped winking now. And so we're back. Welcome back, viewers, to Shaw Cable. And I would invite our our speaker today to come back up here and now face the grilling questions, you know. So please come. I think this is the microphone we use nowadays, and you have the usual. Tell us who you are. Introduce Howard only for about 30 seconds or a minute, and then ask your question. Thanks.
I'm Beth from Harvardville. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed your talk. You pulled together many, many different aspects, and I really appreciate that. Economically, this doesn't seem to make sense to go with the third way. But I guess I'm very concerned because there have been two research studies released and published in the Herald. And aside from the economics, it's been proven that when privatization comes in, more patients die. Why in the world would we want, would our government want to bring in a system that would actually kill more Albertans instead of saving more Albertans?
Yeah, well, I agree. I mean, at the end of the day, what's being proposed under the third way and by our government makes no sense in so many ways. You know, Medicare has, you know, has proven its worth. It's interesting because it's one thing to compare, you know, things in a hypothetical, you know, like if we're talking about if we were in a position like the Americans are now with a private health insurance system and there were no public models, then, you know, you can understand why there might be some legitimate debate. But, I mean, public health insurance has been in place in Canada for more than 4 years now. It's similar systems are in place in almost all the advanced countries in the world. And not only have they worked well, those few countries that still persist in focusing on private models, the Americans in particular, the growing, what I even describe as a majority of and even business people in the United States who are looking at the Canadian model. So why at a time when even the Americans are looking north of the border enviously, why would we be giving away our advantage? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Hello, Michelle Bay, QP Alberta, and Friends of Medicare. My question to you is, you mentioned in your speech that... Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned in your speech that... You mentioned in your speech about the Aon contract and how Jim Dinnings was connected. There's no interest, like self-interest, obviously. So can you elaborate on, is there any more connections with other key people in our government tied to the Aon contract or in somehow supporting it in the way?
Well, I don't know if we have evidence of Tory insiders being directly related to the Aon contract, but what I can say is that there is definitely a web of private self-interest at play here, especially, and I, you know, I don't want to point figures, but especially in Calgary and the Calgary Health Region, you know, there's it's sort of common knowledge that many of the people who are running the Calgary Regional Health Authority have interest in private health care firms. You know, sort of, for example, we have a doctor who used to be the head of orthopedic surgery in the Calgary Regional Health Authority, who happens now to be the president of a surgical suites company that offers orthopedic surgery, for-profit orthopedic surgery on a contract basis to the Regional Health Authority. So he's basically, you know, acting as a contractor to the organization that he used to preside over. And that's just one example. I mean, there's I think, you know, in so many ways, you know, in politics in Alberta, Calgary is ground zero for, you know, what I would describe as, you know, this is sort of political epicenter of bad right-wing thought, you know. And it's true on healthcare too. And you know, there's a whole bunch of people that would make out like bandits if they opened up more services for for-profit delivery. And though unfortunately, those people who would make out like bandits are very well connected to the government, and that and I think there's a, that that says a lot about, you know, what's driving the third wave.
Howard Forsyth, very good speech and very well presented, but couldn't you do better with what Chapter 11 under Free Trade Agreement would permit companies to do once they got a leg in? Because it looks like we could never get them out.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's interesting. After I gave my speech and sat down for lunch, it was actually the first question that people around my table brought up is, you know, you forgot to mention NAFTA. And I didn't forget it. It's just there are so many good arguments to make against privatization in healthcare. But that it's a strong one because for those who aren't familiar with it, you know, Chapter 11, you know, is of the NAFTA agreement is the one that refers to, you know, common treatment. That guarantees common treatment for American firms with Canadian firms. So if we open the door, you know, the concern is that if we open the door for private health insurance company and private health companies to deliver a service, you know, if we allow Canadian firms to deliver it, then these big American firms, which I talked about in my speech in terms of the fraud cases that they've been involved in, we won't be able to keep them out. And in fact, they would be in a position to sue us if we tried to. And you know, so the wolf is at the doorstep. And if they go ahead with the third way, we're afraid that they will let them in. But not only under NAFTA, they wouldn't only be letting them into Alberta; they'd be letting them to the whole country. So this is an issue. I mean, this is where we're having the debate right now. But the implications are national.
My question also was about the North American. I don't know if this is on. My question also was about the North American Free Trade Agreement. And under NAFTA, both companies that we call Canadian insurance companies have lost their national identity and are North American insurance companies. So I just wanted to make that point. But also under NAFTA, one of the things that happened during the whole free trade debate in Canada, those of us who were fighting against NAFTA said that Medicare would be seen by the American companies as an unfair advantage. And we now are talking about the advantage that Medicare provides, excuse me, to Canadian employers as compared to American employers. So my question is, does this concern you, asserting the Alberta advantage that's related to Medicare or the Canadian advantage related to Medicare? Are you concerned that the American companies that don't have this advantage are going to possibly use NAFTA to try to dismantle Medicare on the basis that it's an unfair subsidy to Canadian employers?
Yeah. Well, let me answer that in two ways. First, you know, as I said in my speech, you know, our preference in the labor movement is to maintain the universal public system. I mean, we help build it, we help create it, and you know, our first priority is always to get benefits for as many people as possible. And there's actually a certain amount of self-interest in that from our perspective, because a benefit that's shared by everyone is much more difficult to take away from us than one that maybe is in a few collective agreements and not others, right? So, and that's been our experience. It's a lot easier for employers to take away the things that we fought for, if it's at the bargaining table, than it is in the political arena. So you know, when I talk about, you know, when I talk about the economic advantage conferred by Medicare, when I talk about, draw attention to the advantage that it gives us. I mean, we're not trying to say that this is our preferred. We don't want to bargain this stuff, but we will if we have to, and that's just reality. On the subject of will drawing attention to this fact encourage American companies to sue us? Well, first, this is a commonly known and widely talked about benefit of Medicare. So, you know, if they were going to sue us for the Medicare advantage, they probably would have done it already. And part of me, I guess, the political animal in me says, bring it on, you know, because, you know, honestly, it, you know. We could go on about how NAFTA is a bad deal for Canada, but that there could probably be no better way to show how bad a deal it was if the Americans started using it as a tool to attack Medicare. So, you know, if American companies want to sue us,
for Medicare. I think that would be great because it would give the people on the left of the political spectrum, more ammunition to make the argument that NAFTA needs to go.
Ken Sears, Canadian Opposed Workers Electric District Labor Council. You were talking about choice a little earlier, Brother McGaugh. By way, just of a fast anecdote, one of my ex retired members told me a story the other day. He's worked in the state for quite a long time. He was back down there after retirement. He ran into a woman who had been married to one of the people he worked with. This was in a union job in the shipyards in the West Coast. And he asked about his old friend. And she said, well, he's got to die. She said, we had insurance, but the insurance ran out. I had to make the choice. I had a choice. I had to pull the plug. Otherwise, we lost the house. And that's the type of choice we're talking about here. So, given that, given the fact that as the head of the AFL, you're probably a little better in touch with what's going on in negotiations and lead up to negotiations across the province, what are we hearing in the large bargaining units, the large unions, the steel workers, UAW, the construction trades? Are they beginning to already talk about health benefits? Is that already starting to show up as a factor in negotiations? And is it also showing up as a factor in keeping some of the larger corporations from coming into Alberta, going into projects, simply because those costs are now not fixed?
Mm-hmm. Great story and great question. On the subject of what's happening at bargaining tables around the province, what I can say is that healthcare is becoming more of an issue. It's not a bargaining table issue in the same way it is in the United States. As I mentioned in my speech, healthcare has become the number one and most contentious bargaining table issue in the United States. A much higher priority than wages, pension benefits, anything else. Basically, collective agreements have become about access to health insurance because people can't get it anywhere else. Right? Here in Alberta, there's a lot of buzz. There's a lot of talk about what may happen if the third way proceeds. And in fact, from the Federation's perspective, we're actually sending out a message to our membership. And in fact, next week, I'll be sending out letters to all of our affiliates. We'll also be sending out letters to most of our unionized employers, warning them about the potential cost of the third way. And our goal, is not to get private health benefits. It's to remove the need to negotiate for them. So our message to our unions is to fire a warning shot across employers' bow. But not only that, but to go to employers and say we need to make common cause on this because it's in neither of our best interests. So we'll be asking our unions will be asking employers to go to the government and say stop this insanity, because it's not in anyone's best interest. And I hate to say this, but the truth is that in this province, when it comes to, swaying the mind of government and influencing public policy, we in the labor movement are the usual suspects, right? And they can ignore us, right? I wish that weren't the case, but it's the reality. I mean, we're not only not a government constituency, they score points by, with their core constituencies by beating up on us, right? We know that. So what we're going to be doing is putting pressure on employers to in turn put pressure on the government because, if they start getting letters from Suncor and Sherritt and, and big municipal employers or big healthcare employers even, they'll pay more attention to that. I wish that weren't the case, but so that's our goal. That's our goal.
My name is Lee Martin. I'm from the coordinator for Friends of Medicare, and I'm glad to be here today. Mr. McGowan, you seem to have done a pretty good job of explaining what the third way means. And I'm just wondering, in light of what you know, yesterday on the radio, the MLA for Brooks, Lyle Oberg, was saying that nobody in caucus really knows what the third way is or can explain it in less than 50 words. So my question to you, what's going on here that a former senior cabinet minister in MLA says, I don't know what it's about, what it will mean. You seem to have a good idea. Where's the disconnect?
Yeah, well, I think that the third way, at the end of the day, the third way is, as I said in my speech, a hobby horse for the premier. Okay, he wants to go out with one more big policy victory. He wants to leave as a legacy a major reform and overhaul of the healthcare system. I suppose he thinks this is a good thing, and he thinks he'll go down in history as the guy who saved Medicare from itself. But it's interesting to hear this stuff from Lyle Oberg, because what's clear is that this vision for healthcare, and it is kind of a murky one, has not been communicated to members of even the inner circle. I actually think that that's a good thing, because it means that a lot of the people in the caucus are not invested in this policy as much as they were in, say, previous policies of the government, like the ones aimed at, cutting services and cutting debt and all that stuff. So because they're not as invested in it, that opens an opportunity for us to lobby and put pressure on them. I actually think that, we were talking at the table about how how governments fall, right? Maybe I'm overstretching here, but I said that history shows that when it comes to totalitarian one party governments or something, when they fall fast. When people lose their fear of them, then they rise up. Okay, I'm getting a sense that right now people are losing their fear of the Tory government, and they're losing their fear of Ralph Klein, and we may see that in the next couple of days when the Tories have their leadership vote, and so things may move very quickly. So the good news is that if Ralph topples and is no longer leader 6 months from now, maybe the next crop of them, because they're not invested in the third way, maybe we by getting rid of Ralph, we may also get rid of the third way. That's my hope.
Thank you, Bridget Pastor, the MLA for Lethbridge Eastbourne. Gosh, I couldn't have said it any better. Thank you very much. It's certainly what I'm looking forward to. I think all of you probably connect me with continuing care, and that's not at all what I'm going to talk about. It just probably a surprise to everyone. I'd say that I'm going off on a topic that's in that field, but maybe we'll just go over the moon for today. I'd like you to address the fact that we have a union in this province called FLAC, and how they would overlay their different point of view in terms of what a union is to perhaps actually be on the government side to push this forward in a very negative way. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question. For those who aren't familiar with CLAC, CLAC is an acronym that stands for the Christian Labor Association of Canada. And it is, technically speaking, a recognized trade union. They have bargaining rights in the province. But they have been something of a thorn in the side of the traditional labor movement. They, from our perspective, they are a union that's an, I won't beat around the bush. They're in the pocket of employers, right? They're, we used to talk about company unions. An employer would create a union to sign sweetheart deals and keep real unions out. That's what seems to be happening with CLAC. They are. We define, for the rest of the labor movement, we define our mandate much more broadly. I mean, we focus on, bargaining the best possible contracts, obviously, but most unions in Canada define a much broader social mission. As I said in my speech, our job is not just to bargain benefits for our members, but for all workers. And those kind of victories are bigger and longer lasting and less and more difficult to take away. CLAC, on the other hand, takes a much more narrow vision of what their job is. They're a collective agreement machine, and usually collective agreements that employers like. And so, in that sense, I think that on a political agenda, on political issues like healthcare, CLAC is probably going to line up with the government. But I don't want to dismiss them entirely. But on this, I mean, they're a big headache when it comes to things like negotiating contracts in Fort McMurray, and they're a real thorn in the side of the construction industry. But at the end of the day, they're small, and on healthcare, they're on the wrong side of the issue. And I don't think they matter, to tell you the truth. So.
My name is Dan Christie, and I'd like to preface my remarks by thanking you for presenting a lot of information to us that many of us here are interested in what's going on in this province and haven't had the information on the clear way that we'd like to have had. Thank you so much for giving it to us in such a concise and complete way in such a short time. Now, you referred to the issue of the political involvement of all of this, and Ralph Klein, and the fact that this is his hobby voice, and so on. At our last meeting here at Public Affairs, a speaker in whom we have a lot of faith said that probably the next premier of this province, Mr. Ginning, is the president of an HMO. Can you confirm that or deny it? And the question I'd like to ask, is there any avenue through which we can get information like this? Because if that's true, this is absolute conflict of interest and destructive to all of us.
Yeah. Well, Jim Ginning is interesting because when you compare Jim Ginning to Ralph Klein, you probably couldn't find more of a contrast between leaders. I mean, Ralph has this image of being, everyman, folksy. He's your next door neighbor, the guy you go drinking with. Jim Ginning, on the other hand, honestly, I think it's more image than substance, but Jim Ginning, on the other hand, is, blue suit boardroom corporate. I mean, there's probably no more corporate leader, no more obvious corporate choice, for the leadership of the Conservatives than Jim Ginning. And as part of his work towards the leadership, and he's been doing a lot of interesting things in private life, because as we all know, he had been in public service for a long time. He's most famous, I think, for being treasurer of the province during the biggest cuts, right? But since he left, after hacking and slashing the public service, and he left. The system is shambles. But after that, he went into private life, and in those years, he's been collecting board memberships like candy. Right? The guy sits on the guy sits on probably dozens of corporate boards here in Alberta and across the country. There's probably no more well-connected public figure, political figure in the province. Maybe in the country. I mean, this guy really sits on a lot of boards. So when you say, is he a director of an HMO?
A president.
The short answer is, it's one of his many titles. Yes, he works for an insurance company. He's a director or president of an insurance company that, as one of their products that they offer is supplemental health insurance. So yes, the short answer is, he does sit on a board of a company that would benefit directly from privatization in the third way.
I think he is.
I won't pretend to know all the intricacies, but this guy, but I mean, in the big scheme of things, he probably spends about 15 minutes a week on work for that, because he just collects boards. There's no guy, there's no one who has more boards. Like, I mean, he was on the board of Finning, for example, one of our unions that was on strike. And for me, that sort of raises all sorts of red flags. Can a guy who's so well connected to corporate Canada and corporate Alberta separate himself from those connections and actually make decisions that are in the best interest of the public? I'm not sure that he can.
We have time for one more question, and I think Bob Anderson is going to be a question.
Well, my name is Bob Anderson. There are other groups of people that work in the province that are probably not formally connected with you. I'm thinking of school teachers across the country, university faculty members all across Canada, nurses, doctors. They don't call themselves unions. Some feel that's an unattractive term. But almost every professional group is organized in one way or another that could be referred to as a union. To what extent are you connected with any of them? To what extent do you know where they stand or what they're doing in this respect? Have you any sense of where they're headed?
Yeah. Well, first, just as a small item of correction, the nurses actually are affiliated to the Federation of Labor and have been for the last 2 or 3 years. And it's actually as a result of the healthcare fights that I think that they decided to join. We were working very closely with them in the campaign on Bill 11, and they saw quickly the benefits of working together under the umbrella of labor. So the nurses are actually our biggest affiliate right now. On the subject of the others, it's with the exception of the doctors, who tend to be off on their own. We've had a very good track record of building relationships with other professional associations. In particular, and the biggest one that you mentioned, who's not affiliated to the Federation, but who have been working closely with us, are the teachers. The ATA, one of my jobs as the Federation president was to help raise money for the Friends of Medicare campaign, which Harvey is organizing. And as you know, we just launched television ads. Yesterday, launched television ads. These things are expensive. The teachers gave us a very, very substantial donation. And they talk about healthcare issues all the time at their events, and they give us a platform. So even though that they're not members of the Federation, they are partners in our efforts to protect public healthcare. The same with most of the associations. So we will continue to build those links. And in fact, as I mentioned, when I send out my letters to unions encouraging them to meet with employers to make this an issue, we'll be sending them to non-affiliate unions too. So I will be sending letters to the teachers. I will be sending letters to faculty associations. I'll be sending letters, to even Alberta Union of Public Employees, who are not affiliated with us right now. And because they're, this issue about the costs that are going to be transferred onto our employers is an issue that should be brought up with every employer, not just those who are affiliated with us. Okay.
So our thanks to Gil McGowan, not just for the very interesting talk and answering questions, but also the new face of trade unionism. You know, no longer the Jimmy Hoffa cigar-smoking attached to the mob, this young, sophisticated, dynamic person. And thanks a lot for taking the time to come down here specifically for this. I've roped him into my class this afternoon, of course, and the students are going to be edified by that. Thanks very much again, Gil. Thank you.